Welcome to God and Country Radio, a weekend program that discusses current social, political, economic, and prophetic events in the light of biblical theology. I'm your host, Pastor Brad Winship, pastor of Harbor Bible Church in Lawrence Harbor, New Jersey. You'll have to excuse my voice. I'm just getting over a bad cold. And regardless, a program needs to be put out every week. On this week's program, I would like to address the rise of anti-Semitism in America. 6 months ago, on October 7th, Israel was brutally attacked by a surprise invasion by Hamas. 1,200 Israelis were killed. Women were raped. Babies and children were slaughtered. 250 Israelites were taken hostage, all in the name of Allah. Now, for a while, the world gave Israel some sympathy. But now, after 6 months, pro-Islamic groups have been able to organize anti-Israeli protests on college campuses. And in the words of the Wall Street Journal, Israel is now closer to being a global pariah than ever before. But this is what we should expect. As America has abandoned God and begun to lose its Christian consensus, anti-Semitism is returning like a flood. Because the only reason for America's historic support for Israel has been her Christian culture. You don't get that from anywhere else. You lose the Christian culture, and the Jewish people in America need to start worrying. Now, even before October 6, I was planning to do a program on the rise of anti-Semitism, not on college campuses, but among the conservative right, even in some churches. So I want to briefly address this. I see this as a reaction against unthinking, slavish support for Israel in evangelical churches for the past 75 years, that the Jews are God's people and they can do no wrong and we need to support Israel because they need to be back in the land and rebuild their temple in order for prophecy to be fulfilled. Genesis chapter 12, God says to Abraham, I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. So therefore, if you want to be blessed, you need to bless the Jews. But then some conservative young people, some millennials, begin to read pieces on social media about how certain Jewish people have been the founders and the progenitors of all sorts of ungodly isms and immorality in America. Karl Marx, the founder of communism, was Jewish. The Frankfurt School of Marxist professors who brought cultural Marxism into America were Jewish. Many of the Hollywood elites are Jewish, and there are many Jews in the media industry. George Soros, the funder of all sorts of secular ideology, is Jewish. Leftists such as Leon Trotsky and Noam Chomsky were Jewish. And Jewish communities in America overwhelmingly vote leftism. Jews in Israel also persecute Christians. And Tel Aviv is the Sodom and Gomorrah of the Middle East. So being awakened to those facts, the next generation in the church is beginning to question support for Israel. And we can blame evangelical leaders for teaching supporting Israel without explaining the provisos and the caveats. And that's all summed up in a word on this matter from the Apostle Paul, where in Romans chapter 11, he explains the relationship Christians are to have with the Jews, Paul being a Jew himself. Romans chapter 11, verse 24, from the standpoint of the gospel, they, the Jews, are enemies for your sake, but from the standpoint of God's choice, they are beloved for the sake of the fathers. And there we see the mixed feelings Christians are to have toward the Jewish people. On the one hand, we do not support their Judaism, their rebellion against the Messiah, but we are to give them extra love because of God's original work with the Jews, calling Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the Jewish prophets to give us the Word of God. Even the New Testament was penned by Jews. They are to be beloved. That is the New Testament word agape. And in Romans chapter 1, verse 16, the gospel is to be for the Jews first, then for the Gentiles. The Jews having the Old Testament are more prepared for the gospel of Christ than most other people groups. Now, some people have a hard time seeing the Jews as both the enemies of the gospel and beloved. And for some people, it has to be all or nothing. You know, maybe some people can't chew bubblegum and walk at the same time, but it's possible to hold a paradoxical attitude toward the Jews. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 18, it's good that you grasp one thing and also not let go of the other, for the one who fears God comes forth with both of them. Now, if I have time later, I'd like to discuss in detail evangelical theology toward Israel and their land rights in the Middle East. But let me just briefly answer this neophyte anti-Semitism in the church. First, yes, the evangelical church has not communicated a balanced view of supporting Israel. And yes, you may have discovered some new information about Jewish dysfunction, but don't think that you've uncovered a grand conspiracy of Jewish world domination. Of course, the Jewish people are unbelievers. And as all unbelievers, Ephesians chapter 2, they're dead in their trespasses and sins. They walk according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that's now working in the sons of disobedience. They live in the lusts of their flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and are by nature children of wrath. I grew up in northern Jersey among many Jewish families. My Jewish neighbors and friends weren't Orthodox Jews, but secular Jews. And they were the most godless people I knew in ideology and morality. So my theory has always been this. When people rebel against God after having been given great light, they really have to rebel against God. Their fight against God has to be filled with even more ideological excuses, more blatant rebellion. They have to be in a crusade against God. Hence, we have rabid atheist Jews like George Soros. He hates the Jewish faith and Zionism with more of a passion than any Gentile. Well, second, Jewish people haven't cornered the market on sin. The founders of feminism and Planned Parenthood were all Gentile. The founders of the ACLU were all Gentile. All of America's leftist presidents were Gentile. In America's departure from God, and the departure from the law of nature and nature's God, we did this to ourselves. As the Jews were given God's truth, and the majority eventually rejected it over time, same thing is happening in the Gentile nations. The gospel has gone forth into the world. At first, the Gentile nations were thankful for the truth, but now, like the Jews, the Gentiles are rejecting the truth. Both groups were given the opportunity. Some were saved, but in the end, the majority of both groups become spoiled, ungrateful, and turn away from God. Religion begot prosperity, and the daughter devoured the mother. All of mankind is guilty of sin. In fact, all of mankind is guilty putting Christ on the cross. That's the point being made in Acts chapter 4, verse 27. For truly in this city there were gathered together against your holy servant Jesus, whom you anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate, along with the Gentiles and the people of Israel. The argument that the Jews killed Jesus is a complete misunderstanding of human depravity and the nature of the entire world's enmity against God. Third, if you think the Jews in Israel persecute Christians, that persecution is a mild annoyance compared to the way Muslims and communists persecute Christians. Fourth, one thing God hates is spiritual pride. You want to send your life down the wrong path? Start having spiritual pride. James chapter 4, verse 6, God resists the proud. Do we think we're better than the Jews? In this regard, the Apostle Paul makes this statement in Romans chapter 3, verse 9. What then? Are we better than they? Not at all. For you have already charged that both Jews and Greeks are all under sin. So that's the new rise of anti-Semitism coming from some on the political right. A rise in anti-Semitism tempting the church. And therefore, the Christian community needs to be aware of this and be educated in a biblical view toward the Jewish people. But what we're seeing on college campuses over the last few weeks is a whole other reason for the rise of anti-Semitism. And do you know why this is happening in America? Mostly, and I would say primarily, because of the rise of Islamic immigrants in America. From about 2 million in the early 2000s to about 6 million today. And within a few years, there will be more Muslims in America than Jews. The media is silent about Islam being behind these campus protests. But these protests are being organized and populated by pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian Muslim students. When Muslims were a tiny minority in our country, they kept quiet. But now, with their numbers growing, they've been emboldened. And this is their religious evangelism, to promote Islam and to persecute the Jews. And when they're powerful enough, they will persecute Christians also. Just this last week, Islamists in Egypt attacked and burned Christian homes in an Egyptian town because these Christians were building a new church. For Islam to give ground to Christianity is to blaspheme Allah. The religion of Islam has a much different worldview concerning Jews and the formation of the nation of Israel. And now that Islam is here in America, it's going to clash with the American pro-Israel culture. And this is inevitable. You know, move away from the Christian consensus toward either Islam or secular humanism, and America will no longer support Israel. America will join the rest of the nations at the UN that always vote against Israel. Well, here are the facts. These protests are being organized by Students for Justice for Palestine, SJP. It's a nationwide organization with 200 chapters. They protest Jewish speakers on campus. They protest to divest investment from Israel. This is called the BDS movement, Boycott, Divest, and Sanction. And the organization SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine, came out for support for the October 7th terrorist attacks in Israel. Students for Justice in Palestine is also part of the Westchester People's Action Coalition, WESPAC, which also supports divesting from Israel. And SJP received support from their parent pro-Hamas organization called American Muslims for Palestine. American Muslims for Palestine is currently under investigation for allegedly fundraising and providing money to terrorist organizations. Now, there are actually 116 Columbia campus organizations backing these protests. They're all part of a group called Columbia University Apartheid Divest, which claims that Israel is an apartheid state. Simply because Israel doesn't agree with the Islamic people in the area who want to wipe out Israel. Now, Students for Justice for Palestine are also supported by George Soros and his Open Society Network. Other groups involved are Columbia's Queer Alliance, Columbia's University Students for Human Rights, White Coats for Black Lives, and the Muslim Student Association. By the way, the president of Columbia, Menachi Shafik, is a Muslim Egyptian. And many of the faculty support the student protests. And to the point, if the faculty no longer have a worldview informed by Christianity, gone is going to be support for Israel. Luke chapter 6, verse 40, Jesus said, "A pupil is not above his teacher, but everyone after he has been fully trained will be like his teacher." Now, these protests are being formed by Islamic groups and students. But secondarily, students who believe in critical race theory, cultural Marxism, although they are non-Muslim, are jumping on board. Because the Palestinians are being portrayed as a group oppressed by a white majority. Therefore, Palestinians have a right to eliminate their oppressors. The Jews are considered colonialists. And the pro-Palestinian movement feeds into the CRT anti-colonialism narrative. But who are the oppressors and who are the victims? Well, it all depends on what you believe about the Jews having a homeland in the Middle East. And that's a moral, ethical, religious, metaphysical worldview decision. You're either against the Jews or you're for the Jews. And the religion of Islam is against the Jews. And in the Quran, the logic is this. If God cursed the Jews, we need to do the same. And since God gave the Muslims the land of the Muslims need to keep those lands from the Jews. And that's the same false teaching and reasoning that occasionally appeared in medieval Christianity. Anyway, Israel's six-month war with Hamas has become a new pretext for Islamists to promote their ideology that Israel doesn't have a right to exist in the Middle East. And notice the methodology of Islamic theology. The right to violence and obstruction and jihad to promote religious ideology. Something that we have not seen much in the United States because of the Christian teaching of nonviolence. So at all of these campus protests, there is the chanting of death to Israel, death to America, the burning of the American and the Israeli flag, the waving of the Hezbollah flag. They're calling for Hamas to attack again like they did on October 7th, and that October 7th should happen 10,000 more times. Now, this is coming both from Islamic and non-Islamic students. But notice the solidarity, or rather what they call the intersectionality, between students with Islamic beliefs and students with the bitterness and the hatred of CRT secular beliefs. Among both groups, there's this hatred for the Jews. Now, what's odd is there are many other people groups in this world who are oppressed. But there's no protest for these people on college campuses. The conflict between the Indians and the Pakistanians. The conflict between the CCP and the Uyghurs. The oppression of the Kurds in Turkey. Oppression of the Coptics in Egypt. The oppression of Christians in Burma. The Ukraine and the Russian war, and the Bosnians versus the Serbs. The conflict in Israel is small peanuts compared with other major world conflicts. The state of Israel seems to get all the attention. And I believe there is a satanic spirit behind this, because according to biblical prophecy, God still has a plan for Israel. There will be a final harvest of the physical descendants of Abraham at the end of this age. Hatred for both Jews and Christians is most likely rooted in the hatred the world has toward God's chosen. It goes all the way back to Cain and Abel. God accepted Abel's sacrifice, but not Cain's. So Cain killed Abel. For Cain, it wasn't fair that God would not bless him just as much as Abel, even though Cain approached God in the wrong way. And the Philistines, as soon as they saw that Isaac was blessed by God, they persecuted him out of envy. Genesis chapter 26. Now Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. And the man became rich and continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy, for he had possessions of flocks and herds and a great household, so that the Philistines envied him. Now all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines stopped up and filled them with earth. So these Philistines probably called their envy justice, fairness, equity, but it was all rooted in a hatred of successful, God-blessed people. That's really what's behind the critical race theory, oppressed versus oppressor narrative today. Just understand that overarching issue. Unbelievers hate the believers who are blessed by God. Now, unbelievers themselves could be blessed if they come over to God's side. But no, to envy is easier and more satisfying to the flesh than having true faith and works. Like Winston Churchill said about Marxism, socialism is the philosophy of failure, the creed of ignorance, and the gospel of envy. Its inherent virtue is the equal sharing of misery. Now, I'd like to conclude with a few thoughts about evangelical Christian theology concerning Israel. I already mentioned Romans chapter 11, verse 28. From the standpoint of the gospel, they are enemies for your sake, but from the standpoint of God's choice, they are beloved for the sake of the fathers. Christians are to have a special love for Israel. And Romans chapter 9 through 11 is all about the relationship between the church and national Israel. And one of the points made in chapter 11, verse 18, is don't start to be arrogant or conceited in regard to being better than the Jews. Because just as God broke off the Jewish branches from the kingdom tree, God can also break off the Gentile branches. And you Gentiles were wild branches. It's much easier for God to graft back in the natural branches, the Jews. Then Paul goes on to explain that a partial hardening has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. This is often called the times of the Gentiles. That partial hardening could be referring to the number of Jews, for there is a very small number of Christian Jews, Messianic Jews as they're called. But it's most likely referring to chronology, that the hardening will continue until the times of the Gentiles are finished. And this text supports the prophecy that God still has a spiritual revival plan for the Jewish people. Now, there are those in Christendom that believe in replacement theology, especially in Roman Catholicism, that the church has replaced national Israel as the people of God, and that God will no longer again deal with the Jewish people in a special way. Hence, it's assumed that Jews should not have any land rights in the Middle East. However, the Romans 11 text and the Revelation chapter 7 and the prophecies of Zechariah speak of God working again among the Jews at the end of this age. Zechariah chapter 10, verse 8, I will whistle for them to gather them together, for I have redeemed them, and they will be as numerous as they were before when I scattered them among the peoples. They will remember me in far countries, and they with their children will live and come back. I will bring them back from the land of Egypt and gather them from Assyria. I will bring them into the land of Gilead and Lebanon until no room can be found for them. This is the prophecy that the Jews will return from dispersion. But Zechariah was writing after the Jews already returned from Babylon. The prophecies of Zechariah speak of another dispersion among the nations and another return. I always see this as take number two. Just like in the first century, the Jews are brought back into their homeland and they're given another chance to receive their Messiah. But Zechariah the prophet doesn't paint a very pretty picture of what this final return is going to look like. God is going to place the Jews into a pressure cooker. Most likely so they will have no other choice but to turn to God. So let me suggest that you don't want to be on the side of fighting against God's prophetic plan for the Jews. You've been listening to God and Country Radio. The website to listen to this program again or to other past programs is godandcountryradio.org. The extended video version of this program is at my YouTube and Rumble channels, God and Country Biblical Exposition. Thanks for listening. Stand firm in the truth. And may Jesus Christ reign.